Matthew 18, verse 19, it says, "Again I say unto you that if two of you shall agree on earth as touching anything that they shall ask, it shall be done for them of my Father which is in heaven." If two of you, if even just two of you, shall agree on earth as touching anything that they shall ask, it shall be done for them of my Father which is in heaven. I think the important word there is agree. I really feel that. If you meditate on this long enough, you know, it's not so much the fact that it's the breadth of this promise, you know, if anything, touching anything that they shall ask, it shall be done. I mean, that's a wonderful part. But I believe the operative idea here is agreement. I believe that. And I have some thoughts about that. This word agree, just so we can understand, is a word in Greek that where we get our word symphony, symphoneo, I think. And it has the idea of we're all together. We don't all exactly sound alike. We're not in like total unison, but we are so much so in agreement and in harmony that it sounds like we are all pulling the same way. We're all exactly on the same page of the sheet music. That's the idea. There's an agreement. And what I want to talk about today is this idea of agreement and prayer. If you look in Acts chapter 1, verse 14, you don't have to keep turning there. This is the only other passage. Acts chapter 1, 14, these all continued with one accord in prayer and supplication. One accord. That word is a different word. It's the word, see if I can look it up. Hamathumadon. That's the Greek word. It's made up of two words. Hama or homo means one, like homogenous. And then thumadon is actually the word thumos, which, interestingly, is the word that means passion, or it actually sometimes can mean anger. It's a very strong word. It can also have the idea of heat. So there's something very strong communicated here. So when you read it in English and it says they all continued with one accord in prayer, you can almost just sort of gloss over that, like, okay, they were all together in the same room and they were praying together. No, I think that there's a much stronger idea communicated here. One passion, probably where Dr. Lawson gets his ministry's name from. But it's a passion that is often translated wrath. It's like there's a very strong emotion here, very strong. And it's one. And there's the idea of when Christ talked about the violent storming the kingdom, the violent take it by force. The kingdom of heaven suffereth violence, but the violent take it by force. I think there's the same spirit of the idea where there's some strength of passion and of a united thing going on here. Okay, and this idea of agreement and unity, one passion, one heat. Okay, we get the point. And that's what the early church was doing. That's what we see happening with that verse I just quoted about the violent taking it by force. By the way, that idea conjures in my mind an imagery of a battalion going up to the gates of a fortified city and charging at it. But the idea of not being united would be that they make the charge, but only one guy is the one banging on the door. Everyone just sort of stops short of that and only one of them is just banging on the door. They're not all there banging on the door. They may all be charging at the gate, they may all be rushing it, but they're not all banging on the door. Because they're not really united in that. In the case of the symphony, that word in agreement, Matthew 18, if two of you shall agree on earth, that word is symphonio or something like that. Symphonio, yes. It's the idea of, my son once told me, because he used to play in an orchestra, that there would be some parts of the piece that were particularly difficult for him to play, and so he would just sort of fake it. And he wouldn't actually play, but he would just sort of fake it. I think that I've heard advice like this also when you're singing in a choir. I've heard it where they said, look, if you forget the words, just mouth the words watermelon over and over again, because at least, you're not going to sit there without any movement of your mouth. Just say the word watermelon quietly to yourself and pretend like you're singing. If you forget the words, and then you can pick up wherever you remember. That's not what we're talking about. You can be, you can look the part. You can look like you're in there. You can look like you're in the choir. You can look like you're in the symphony, but you're not actually what this is talking about. I think we understand that pretty clear. And you're not on a different page. Everyone's there, and everyone's playing. And everyone's doing their part. And everyone's praying. Now, the reason why I've been struggling with this so much is because I want to believe that what we're doing on paper is correct. What we're doing on paper is correct. But I suspect that there's some problems from time to time that we need to just look at when it comes to this idea of agreement in prayer. Now, I'm going to itemize for you three things that keep us from real agreement in prayer. Three general ideas, and I've alliterated to help us kind of remember it. The first one is the reality, okay? The reality. And the second one is the actual request, and the third one is the reason. Now, I'll explain all this. I'll do my best. The reality. What do I mean by reality? What I mean is that I'm not under any illusion that prayer meetings, whether this one or any prayer meeting, so it's not just particular to this one, I'm not just picking on this one. I would say any prayer meeting. You will have elements and folks in there that aren't really engaged. That's the reality. Okay, that's what I'm talking about. So we could be like in that symphony, we can be in the orchestra and the choir, but we're not actually all singing. We're not actually all playing. We're not actually all praying. This is a real it's a real bother to me sometimes. Sometimes we can treat prayer meetings like this, like background music or white noise. We just have it on in the background and we like to hear it, but we're not really engaged. We're not really engaged. It's almost like entertainment. It's like our favorite soap. We want to just tune in because it's something that we enjoy at a certain level. But are we really, the reality of it is I'm just feeling pretty convinced that the reality is that we're not really all, it's like that illustration where we look the part, but we're not actually singing. And that's the reality. And this is why from time to time, and this is why I don't want to offend anybody here, I really don't, but this is why from time to time I kind of like it when the cameras are on, because it helps us have a little bit of accountability of, look, we're here, we're not, our minds are not somewhere else, and we just have a good sense of, we know what's going on. But this is not to make anyone feel awkward or anything like that. I'm just trying to be honest. And there have been times when you know this as well as I do, a mic will go hot, and we know that that person is obviously not actually praying with us. And it's very distracting, it's very discouraging actually too. And so I would say, very kindly, if you're really not here to do what we're doing, you don't have to be here. And that sounds awful, but you don't have to be here. Isn't it true that you would say that you would prefer to be praying with a few people that are really with you than with hundreds of people that are just sort of not really there? Isn't that true? I think that's true. I think we would all agree that that is what we want. And so the reality is that we could be here, but we're not here. Okay, we can be here and we're not really playing. We can be in the orchestra, but we're not playing. That's the reality. The request, what do I mean by that? That reality part is one of the things that's preventing us from being in agreement. That's all I'm trying to say. Things that make it so that we're not in agreement. Another thing is the request. What do I mean by request? Sometimes there are requests and things that are prayed that we actually don't agree on. Where we think that it's a good thing, but it's actually, it can be a very divisive thing. Okay, we can go down some examples. I'm not going to. But there are situations where things that are of secondary importance to the main thing, which I'm going to get to, could be either requested or brought up in a prayer, and we just don't really have agreement on it. And so there's a sense where we can't really all be right. That's another hindrance to this whole idea of agreement. One just passing example I can give is as it relates to, you know, back in the COVID days, there was some possibility, strong possibility of division, even in this prayer meeting, right? On church closures, the vaccine, mask, unmask, it was a recipe for division. It was bound to happen, but thankfully God brought us through that. And there could be a difference of opinion on things like that. That's just one example. There's loads of them. But the actual request itself could cause us not to be in agreement. Now, this is why in a New York prayer meeting, very wisely, they would post signs. 1857, they would post signs that very clearly stated, no controverted topics to be discussed. They just understood that that was going to kill a prayer meeting. And so you had the Calvinists praying against the Arminians, you had the Arminians praying against the Calvinists, and so on, right? You have that sort of thing, possibly. Or the infant baptists on the believers, you know, no controverted topics to be discussed. They knew it back then. And I'm just saying that this is the whole request to keep with the R's. The request can be a point of disagreement. The final thing I'll say is so we have the reality of it. Hey, you can be tuned out and we wouldn't know. The request, we're just not in agreement on things. And then the reasons. Let me just touch on this real quickly. Reasons. What do I mean by that? Why are we doing what we're doing? Why are we actually praying for revival? Why are we? Now, again, this is. I'm just going to make this a very generic statement. This is not, please don't take this the wrong way, but there are times when we're praying for revival in our home, or in our marriages, or in a church, and we see that almost like we would view some sort of radical surgery for somebody who wants to lose weight. Okay? We see it as a kind of a quick fix to get from here to there, and it's radical surgery. We think that revival is going to fix all the problems we have at home, all the problems we have in our marriage, all the problems we have in our church, and there's a sense where it will. Of course, it'll introduce new problems. We don't talk about that much, but we see it that way. It's like we don't want to do the hard work of diet and exercise in order to get there. We'd rather do the surgery. And it's nothing against surgeries if you do it. I'm not talking about, I'm just using that as an illustration. That the reason that we pray for revival is actually a carnal one, somewhat of a carnal one. You know, James talks about this, right? He says, you pray, you don't have, because you might consume it on your lust. The reason is wrong. Now, it's hard to identify that, because sometimes when we're in the midst of something, we just want out of the thing. We just want relief from the thing. And so it's really hard for us to identify that rightly sometimes. And I don't want to be dogmatic about this, because God is your judge and I'm not your conscience. And you just have to figure this out between you and the Lord. But there are cases, I think even in my own life, if I can say it this way, where there have been some relational challenges, let's say. And there have been times when I'm praying the Lord would do something akin to a revival. Like, Lord, intervene, change the heart, do something. And where you actually have it in His Word, what we are to do. See, we're almost using it as a reason to not do the hard and humbling work of the things that we're actually commanded to do. So very practically, if you go to 1 Peter, oh, you don't have to turn there. 1 Peter chapter 3, that whole first passage there talks about the relationship between husbands and wives, right? And sometimes we could get into a state where we want to pray for something and we want something to happen in order to have relief somewhere, but we're not either willing or somehow we're just missing this harder and humbling work. That if wives are to be in subjection to your own husbands, and if the husband does not obey the word, they may, without the word, be won by the conversation or the life of the wife, the lifestyle, what they can see. While they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear, whose adorning, you know, the outside, whose adorning, let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting of the hair, wearing of gold or whatever, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit. For after this manner, verse 5, old-time holy women also trusted in God, adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham. And verse 7 now talks about the husband's duty. Sometimes, I mean, I've been guilty of this. I'll pray for something if there's some issue, and I'm not willing to obey here. Likewise, husbands, dwell with your wives according to knowledge. You got to know them. In other words, take the step to talk to them. Take the step to be humble enough to go to them. You don't cross your arms and wait for them to come to you. And praying all the time, Lord, fix her, fix her, fix her. You humble yourself and you dwell with them according to knowledge. Giving honor unto the wife. So why? So that your prayers are not hindered. It's all tied to our prayer lives, isn't it? Finally, be all of one mind, having compassion one of another, love as brothers. In other words, there are some things that are laid out in Scripture for us to do, that we are maybe using the trump card, if I can say it that way, of revival to do it for us. Because we don't want to humble ourselves. We don't want to have to go through the hard work of spending time with our kids, maybe. And pouring in the effort that we need to pour in. We want God to do it. You know, God, fix that over there. Okay. You get my point about the reasons. Sometimes the reasons could be off is simply my point. Now, these are some of the hindrances to agreement. And when you come to a prayer meeting like this, where we're all over the world, we don't really know one another, is it really possible for us to be in agreement? Because we don't know your home situation, your life, your the circumstances. We don't know if we really want to be praying the same way that you're praying about something, or we don't agree with the actual thing itself. You know, how on earth will this work? Can it work? Can it even work? Well, I've come to the conclusion that it can, but it can only work in two ways. And then I'll be done. And I really apologize for the length of this. Number one, it can work if you go hyper-local. Now, what do I mean by that? Like I just said, we're all spread around. We don't know one another. And so we're praying for things, and we don't really know the full situation. We don't know if, hey, maybe they're in error. Maybe we should be praying for something else. You know, we don't know. Now, if you're hyper-local, meaning a husband and wife or a family or some friends or a local church, you know a lot more. And so you can pray with a lot more knowledge, intelligence, direction, guidance, and effectiveness, I would say, than just praying for things that feel good. You go hyper-local, and I'll just say this. It's kind of early to say this, but I have been really thinking about that, and I've been talking to Rick. I'm not saying that we should do this today, but I've been thinking about that for myself. If I need to just look at these students that we have at Bob Jones, there's just two or three of them right now. But hey, that's okay if two of you, right? And just go hyper-local, where I just really focus on praying with these individuals, get to know them really well. I see Tom Stoltz on the call. He's doing that with the Greenville. I'm not sure if it's still going on, but the idea was right. I think the idea was right, where he was taking this concept of a United Prayer Meeting and he was localizing it into Greenville United Prayer. I'm 100% behind that kind of a thing. And I know it's not as novel or as fancy or as interesting maybe as a global prayer meeting from all these nations and all this. But that has its problems too, like I mentioned. You have all these different extra challenges you're fighting it through. You have cross cultures, cross countries, and people could use this as a platform to and they're not actually praying for the thing. They're using it as a platform for airing things. Okay? It could be that way. So those are extra challenges. But when you go hyper-local, you don't really have those kind of challenges, do you? And you have more knowledge. Now, that's the one thing. The second thing, the second way I believe this could work is if we find something we can all really agree on. That's the key, which is why I've kind of been harping on this. And I'm not perfect. I'm not saying what's wrong with you people. I'm in the same boat. I am trying to help me. So don't think of this as a criticism as much as, look, I really believe this is the only way to have real agreement. Not that we're just all on the same call and we're sort of in agreement, but we're actually all banging on the door. We have the one passion. We are total agreement. Is we find that topic that we can be completely in agreement on. And I believe this is where Edwards got it right. I do. You see, Jonathan Edwards, when he wrote his book, he got it right. And if you actually read it, if you take the time to read it, he totally understood what sort of things that I'm raising here. He totally got it. Which is why, even when he put out this proposal for United Prayer, and it went abroad, it went to Scotland, it went everywhere. So it wasn't a hyper-local thing, but he determined that the way this could work is if we totally agreed on what it is that we were doing. And the title gives it away. The title of his book right away gives it away. It's a humble attempt, so it is done in humility, to promote, guess what? Explicit agreement and visible union of God's people in extraordinary prayer. This is his title now. What's the agreement around? The revival of religion and the advancement of Christ's kingdom. Interesting. The revival of religion. You know what that means? That means that all of our religion, all of the things that we think of religion being, like our religious activities, our Bible readings, our prayers even, our Sunday church going, our outreach, all of our, that encompasses everything, religion. We're asking that God would revive. And if you read his actual treatise on this in the book, where he's going to Zechariah 8, he is basically making the fine point that what it is that we're praying for is nothing other than God himself. We're praying for his presence. That's it. That's what revival is. The revival of religion is for God's presence, the glory of the Lord, to fill the temple, essentially. And it's for the advancement of Christ's kingdom. Now, can we agree on that? Can we agree, like, totally, so that we're actually wholeheartedly one passion and agreement on the advancement of Christ's kingdom? Of course we can. I think we can. Of course we can. We want to see Christ's name made great everywhere. No, none of us like to see his name blasphemed. None of us like to see that. None of us like to see the wicked deriding and railing on Christ. None of us like to see that. We want to see his name made great everywhere. Does that include our homes? Absolutely. So, but that's the reason. That's the reason. It's not so that we can have a quick fix to have a happier life. It's because we want to see his kingdom advanced everywhere. Yes, in our homes. Absolutely there. In our churches and in our nations. Can we agree on this? Absolutely we can agree on this. So my problem here then is this whole idea of agreement. Can we be agreed? Can we really be agreed? And so is it right to pray for people? Well, yes, of course it is. As long as you're praying in line with the advancement of Christ's kingdom and for his glory. It's not in some sort of backward way so that we can have things a little bit easier or whatever. I've beat that horse long enough, but that's all I'm going to say. I believe that we can have agreement. I believe that we can continue to pray together, but we have to be truly agreed. If any of you, I'll say it again, if two of you shall agree on earth, and I realize the context of this is church discipline. I'm totally aware of that, but I believe that the principle of this can stand. If any of two of you shall agree on earth as touching anything that they shall ask, the emphasis being on agree, it shall be done for them of my Father which is in heaven. Amen.